relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
If you like America First, then check out our separate podcast, The Battle for 1600, with my former White House colleague, Boris Epstein. Every week, we give you the inside, in-depth analysis of what's really going on. The Battle for 1600. Subscribe today.
You're listening to America First with Sebastian Gorka, former strategist to President Donald J. Trump.
The man who's famous for the mass production of the automobile, Henry Ford, once said that history is bunk. It's bunk, he said. It doesn't matter. What matters is the here and now. Well, Henry Ford was a pretty good inventor, but he was a lousy philosopher. Of course history matters, but why? The Roman historian Titus Livius, writing about 2,000 years ago, he had a pretty good answer to that question.
The study of history is the best medicine for a sick mind. For in history, you have record of the infinite variety of human experience plainly set out for all to see. And in that record, you can find for yourself and your country both examples and warnings. Find things to take as models. Base things rotten through and through to avoid.
Maybe our old Roman friend was onto something. The study of history is the best medicine for a sick mind. And there are a lot of unhappy people running around today, not just here in New York, but everywhere. People who could benefit from a good dose of history to help set them straight. We study the past. We study the history of our own civilization so that this record could speak its truths and its warnings and its lessons into our present reality, to get a sense of perspective. Why does history matter? Because future leaders need to understand the past.
Well, I don't know about you, dear friends. I'm not sure about the guy they hired to do the voiceover for Titus Livius. I think there's somebody else with a better voice, perhaps even cheaper, who could have done it better. But I want to see the rest of that film. Why? Because he's just right. Who made it? It's just the beginning. A good friend of America First. He's in studio with us right now. Professor Joseph LeConte of the Heritage Foundation, Simon Center for American Studies. Professor, welcome back.
Seb, great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Can I ask, we're going to have fun here. You're going to stay in the studio. We're going to talk about your Tolkien project, C.S. Lewis, this latest movie series for Heritage. But can I ask a really naive and maybe dumb question? Why did you have to say what you said? Why are we here having to say, what? We have, if we go back to the first real historian Thucydides, maybe, 3,000 years, maybe 2,500 years of written history. Why do we have to tell people, you might want to read it, Joe? Why do we have to even say that?
Because of the sustained assault on memory that has been launched upon us, our culture and our civilization for decades. And part of the problem, I think, Seb, we can agree, we conservatives, many of us, we vacated the space that we should have remained in, whether it's higher education, the entertainment industry, etc. I mean, think about who's teaching history nowadays in the major academy. We know this.
Right.
So we're reaping the whirlwind, it seems to me, from that neglect. There's a wonderful moment, if you think about why history matters, particularly in this present moment of crisis. Go back to 1940 for a minute. In Great Britain, we'll pick up C.S. Lewis here in more depth, I think, in a minute. C.S. Lewis is talking to a group of young people, undergraduates, and Britons at war, 1940. And he says to them, what we need perhaps most is intimate knowledge of the past. Britain's in an existential fight for its life, and he's telling these undergraduates, We need intimate knowledge of the past. And then he answers the question, well, why would that be? Yeah. Because it inoculates us from the cataract of nonsense that pours forth from the press and the microphone of our age. His words, not mine. 1940. If there was a cataract of nonsense then,
yeah,
we are neck deep in it now.
There is the cacophony. There is an orchestra of cataracts of nonsense. Yes. And I'm just completely free associating here. You mentioned World War II. You mentioned Britain at war. It cannot be an accident that the greatest statesman of the modern age, a man who literally saved Western civilization, was himself a historian. That's you look at Winston Churchill. This studio is not big enough for his collected works on the Duke of Marlborough, the English-speaking community. He was a historian, not only a prime minister.
Yes, we used to think that quality of being attentive to our past was actually necessary for statesmanship.
Yes.
Or just being an educated citizen in America. We used to think that was important, right?
Let me ask you, you mentioned something right there, and I want to jump straight into it. You said we vacated that arena. Yeah. And it's so true. It is not exaggeration to say of the culture, the only thing that remains powerfully conservative of all possible sectors is talk radio, whether it's education, whether it's Hollywood, whether it's the media, whether it's social media. It is not conservative. It doesn't celebrate our civilization. It doesn't celebrate our founding values. Have you identified in your studies, whether as a professor, now the director of the Simon Center, a moment or a conscious decision, or was it lurching towards the snooze button, as Bork once said, I think? Why did we surrender the cultural territory as conservatives? Do you have any inkling?
I only have a stab and an answer, Seb, and it's only a partial answer. And I don't think there's any particular moment that you would point to, because it's happening over a period of decades. And it really, I think, is accelerated in the First World War. And why is it accelerated? Because the war seemed to do so much damage to the institutions of Western civilization, democratic capitalism, Christianity, the whole idea of the worth of the individual, individual virtue, heroism, all those ideas and concepts that were so integral to Western civilization came under a rapid assault after the First World War.
So you subscribe, because I find it it seems slightly simplistic, but, you know, Occam's razor does sometimes apply. You do subscribe to the idea that with the death of a large part of a whole generation of men in World War II, that just simply created an irresistible nihilism across Western civilization.
I don't like to use the word irresistible or inevitable, because the historians, we don't like the word inevitable, because we always have choices to make.
Yes.
Individuals have choices to make. We have reason, and we have the capacity to make good choices and to resist evil or not. But the war seemed to invalidate these ideas that we had taken for granted. Remember how Europe itself, of course the United States, moving in this more liberal democratic direction, throwing off tyranny, etc. But then you've got these democracies of Europe engaged in what can only be called a mutual suicide pact in the first. So it seemed to invalidate these ideas. And it does create a vacuum then. Who's going to fill the vacuum of liberal democracy, fascism, communism, eugenics, scientism, materialism, and all the rest of it?
How does that plug into the idea of an enlightenment gone crazy, where man is the center of all, man can create paradise, and that there is no need. There is an utter denial of immutable eternal truths. Are these things working together with that nihilism?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, it seems to me that the Enlightenment Project doesn't know how to respond to the new ideologies of the 20th century, does it? Because the Enlightenment Project, at least the French version, the militant Enlightenment, not the Scottish-American Enlightenment, but the militant French Enlightenment, has so disconnected itself from the transcendent, from God, from the biblical tradition. What are your moral resources to push back? It's left naked as a babe.
Yeah. Right? You used at least three times, or maybe you did it twice, I did it once, we used this word, Western civilization. It feels so strange to even use it in 21st century. Can we recapture that phrase? Because it's clear that it has content, and it did for two millennia. Well, if you go back to Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle, through the Romans, through to the modern republic, there is a content to that word.
Yeah.
Can we recapture? Can we use that word?
I think we have to. It's part of what I feel like is part of my calling, my vocational calling, is to remind us of the great achievements of Western civilization, to defend them, to promote them, to teach them. We actually, as you know, Seb, after the First World War, in the United States at least, there was this real attempt, hey, we've got to remind ourselves of what we do stand for. So Western civ classes, they really entered the curriculum in the American campus. They began to be vacated, you know when, the late 1960s and 1970s. Hey, hey, ho, ho, Western Civ has got to go. Right. That's the chant.
Right. And today it is an indictment of conservatism, I believe, that you can graduate from what were the best, I think now they're just travesties, but the best Ivy League schools, with a major in English, having never read Shakespeare or never having taken a Western, if you can even find, if there even are courses that are called Western Civilization or Grey Books, is the question. We're going to continue the discussion. He's in studio. We're not letting him go. He's Professor Joseph LeConte, Director of the Simon Center for American Studies at the Heritage Foundation. Follow him at Joseph LeConte, LOCONTE. And, of course, it's the conservative mothership. We love it. Support it. Join it. Heritage.org. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First on the Salem Radio Network, coming to you from the ReliefFactor.com studios. Check out our live streaming channel, Rumble.com/Seb Gorka. That's Rumble.com/SEBGORKA. Back with you after these messages. Relief Factor. Have you tried every other form of pain relief only to fail and not find your answer? Well, try this incredible product that is providing liberation from pain to tens of thousands of Americans across the country, including Alicia from California. I'm a grocery store worker and have been working doubles during this coronavirus shutdown. At 52 years old, my two bad knees are not getting a rest. I literally limp to and from bed. 2 days into Relief Factor and the pain has decreased substantially. So thankful for this amazing product. That could be you. It should be you. Find out today the only way you can by ordering the 3-week quick starter pack at ReliefFactor.com. Call them at 800-500-8384. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening just like I do. And I promise you, by the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me, Alicia, and thousands of your fellow Americans. What have you got to lose except the pain? Do it today. 800-500-8384. ReliefFactor.com. ReliefFactor.com.
On the side of the U.S. Constitution, America first.
We're talking about Western civilization saving, living the values that made our civilization possible in America, the greatest nation on God's earth. And one of those things is stepping up against evil and helping the most vulnerable. You can actually do that right now as a listener of this show. There are millions of children in America who have lost a parent to the prison system. They are vulnerable. 70% of them will end up in prison themselves unless we help break that cycle. And you can do it. You can help send one of them or more to the faith-based Christian summer camp run by the Prison Fellowship. You've already helped thousands of children. Will you be one of the ones to help the most vulnerable of all? A donation in any amount makes a difference, but $200 pays for a whole week at a Christian summer camp for one of these girls or boys. Please donate as much as you can. $1,000 is 5 children, and you are literally doing the Lord's work. Go to SebGorka.com. That's SEBGORKA, SebGorka.com, and click on the Angel Tree banner at the very top, or call them directly with your donation on 888 888- 206-2794. That's 888 888-206-2794, sebgorka.com, and the Angel Tree banner. We are back with the director of the Heritage Foundation Simon Center for American Studies, Professor Joseph LeConte, an expert on, well, the people who I think didn't reinvent, but saved for us the story of heroism, of the virtues in their fictional works, C.S. Lewis, J.R.R. Tolkien. We'll talk about that momentarily. I'm just going to share with you my conclusion after the last year of COVID and what happened with the November elections and everything else. It is my contention, it is my strong belief that the greatest thing, the greatest problem we have in America and in Western civilization, if you like, is the lack of courage. And in your new series, what is the name of your series?
Our series is America and the Struggle for Freedom.
Okay, America and the Struggle for Freedom. You tell the story of Socrates and perhaps the ultimate example of courage. Why is Socrates? Tell the story, yes. And why that, yes, story is so important.
Yes, he's on trial for his life in 499 BC.
False accusations of, you know, perverting the youth, corrupting the youth.
And he's corrupting the youth by teaching them to think on their own.
Right.
And he's challenging the establishment, and of course the establishment wants to cancel him.
Can I just think of that? Think of that. His sin, his charge, was teaching people,
yes,
how to think for themselves.
Yes.
Do you see a parallel, perhaps, with,
yes,
today? Sorry, carry on,
no,
Professor.
No, that's quite all right. And he gets the choice. Well, you can permanent exile or death by poison. Now, remember, this is Athens. This, yeah, is the peak of democratic civilization in the ancient world. The Athenian jurors debate and deliberate and find him guilty. And, of course, he chooses the hemlock. So then you have to ask the question, well, what's the legacy of Socrates? The legacy is his willingness to die for an idea.
Right.
The
so instead of surviving,
yes,
going off to live in some remote region outside,
yes,
of the polis, outside of the,
yes,
the Greek state, no, he didn't want to live out his years.
Yes.
Having done what? Betrayed that which he believed in.
That's right. The freedom to pursue the truth according to the dictates of conscience. That's what that's the principle he died for. And that's happening in the West. It's being pioneered by Western thinkers, ignored by virtually everyone else in the ancient world.
Can I attempt to draw, this is really outrageous of me, to try and draw a parallel from Socrates to an event I went to recently in Virginia. But I was asked with my wife to address an event of Republicans at the Trump Golf Course. Beautiful place. I'd never been before. And it was a gala. Everybody was dolled up to the nines. And we walked in. I was with my wife. And this lady stops me as soon as I enter. And she says, can I have a photograph? And I said, sure. We do the selfie. And as I always say, I say, don't forget to tag me when you post it on Facebook. And suddenly her face went ashen. And this is the toughest of the tough conservatives hanging out together, celebrating their values. And she said, oh, I can't do that. There's so many haters around here. My husband is self-employed and we have a business. Well, that's a problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you're not prepared, yeah, to put your face and your name to your values,
yeah,
what is, yeah, the value of those values to,
yeah,
you?
Yeah.
The cancel, is that a parallel that is fair?
The cancel culture is succeeding because,
yes,
of lack of courage.
Yes.
Isn't it said? That's why.
Exactly. Right. And that whatever the issue is that motivates you the most as a conservative, everybody has their priorities, whether it's freedom of speech, whether it's the culture of life, anti-abortion,
yeah,
whether it's the Second Amendment, what have you, national,
yes,
security. The thing we lack the most collectively,
yes,
is the courage.
Yes, and it comes to mind a line from W.H. Auden. He's commenting on the decade of the 1930s leading up to the Munich moment, and then, of course, World War II. The accommodation with totalitarianism, communism and fascism,
yes,
the Western democracies. He calls it a low, dishonest decade.
Well, and how telling was it that in that decade, the man who would eventually, literally save civilization was pilloried. The,
yeah,
wilderness years. When Churchill,
yeah,
when he said back in the 30s, this chappie, this Austrian in Germany who's become the Chancellor,
yes,
he's not good and fascism isn't good for England or the West. He was ridiculed. He was,
yes,
laughed at for,
yes,
years.
Yes, he was the warmonger.
Yes.
He was marginalized. He was the belligerent warmonger. But think about it. It almost overnight, Seb, Winston Churchill's perceived weaknesses became strengths. Andrew Roberts, in his biography on Churchill, Walking with Destiny, is brilliant on this point. The warmonger now is the guy who is prescient.
Yeah.
The guy who used this inflated rhetoric to describe the struggle, that rhetoric now seems appropriate to describe what they're facing in the fascist totalitarian threat. His weaknesses, his perceived weaknesses, become strengths.
Do we see any proto-Churchills? Are there any statesmen or politicians who have the values that would have see them lambasted by polite society, but are the Ajaxes we need?
I'm the historian living probably too much in the past to answer that question for you.
But there is a recent politician who doesn't fit into the elite, right?
Yeah.
There is a recent politician who is pilloried by those who like to hang out at the cocktail parties in Georgetown and Adams Morgan.
Yeah, the lack of courage. Back to your point of the lack of courage, I think is, I was coming up here to the studio, and that was literally, that phrase was on my mind. I feel exactly the same way.
In your review of the real histories, not just the fiction, the courage is often found after an example is set by another, is it not? There is a catalyst. No. When one person shows courage, it is very rarely in a vacuum. Yes. It acts
as
a quote-unquote trigger.
That's right. And let's perhaps remain with Churchill for a moment, if we could. We have other examples. Martin Gilbert's his slim little biography on one of his slim biographies on Churchill. He describes Churchill having enough courage for everyone. That's how his colleagues described him. Enough courage for everyone. So what does he do? Here's the thing, Seb. We need to stop being on the defensive.
Yes.
We need a Churchillian spirit. Think about what Churchill did in 1940 after the evacuation of Dunkirk. 2 days after that humiliating evacuation of Dunkirk, what does he do? He orders his generals to draw plans for a cross-channel invasion 4 years before it happens.
Yep.
That's what we need, my friend.
We need some of that Churchillian spirit. Where is Ajax when you need him? We are talking to the director of the Simon Center for American Studies at the Heritage Foundation, Professor Joe LeConte. Follow him at Joe LeConte on Twitter. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is the Salem Radio Network. Whether it's the regular Hellcat or whether it's the compensated RDP with that miniature red dot, I love them all. How did it take so long to invent a factory compensated subcompact 9mm? Well, guess what? Springfield did it, and I'm a huge fan, and I'm Sebastian Gorka.
The Hellcat from Springfield Armory is still the smallest, highest capacity micro compact in the world. Available in standard or optics-ready configurations, class-leading capacity of the Hellcat gives you 11+1 with the standard magazine and 13+1 with the included extended mag. The definitive concealed carry pistol is here. The Hellcat from Springfield Armory gives you the capacity to defend.
Dr. G is in the house on America First.
We are back to talk about Western civilization, the virtue, I think it's correct, courage, the one virtue that makes all the others possible, and why we lack it so much. Just look at the last year and our nation's, our civilization's response to the deadliest export to come out of China. And that, of course, is COVID-19. We have in studio, we are delighted to have with us the author of A Hobbit, A Wardrobe, and A Great War, a fabulous book. He is the director of the Simon Center for American Studies at the Heritage Foundation, Professor Joe LeConte. First things first, for those who are not familiar with your work, why this book? Why did this book need to be written, and why on these authors?
It seemed to me that of all the wonderful biographies of these two men, there's just not enough attention to the fact that they both fought in the First World War, went through the fires of that conflict.
So we're talking about C.S. Lewis, J.R.R. Tolkien.
They meet at Oxford, become friends, and then they go on to write these great epic works. And if you think about it, The Lord of the Rings, The Chronicles of Narnia, near the heart of those stories, they're war stories. So three words describes why: war, friendship, and imagination.
And not only that, I loved it when I first delved into your book, the reason for why they wrote them. Because these books are seminal to my childhood, The Witch in the Wardrobe, my mother read to me. Mm-hmm. Then my wife, Katie, read The Lord of the Rings to our son, who he must have watched the movie, let alone read the book, I don't know, 200 times by now. It is his favorite series of anything. And the reason that they wrote the works, you explain in your book, is because they couldn't find that which they wanted to read.
Yes.
So they said, if I can't find what I want to read, I'm going to write it,
That's exactly right. And they're very conscious as well, Seb, of the ideologies that are now infecting the academy, affecting the larger literary world. And I think they are deliberately pushing back. And that needs more attention. It's not an accident.
Explain that.
Well, think about it. They have a ringside seat to these great totalitarian powers that are coming into their own in the 1920s, 30s, and in the 40s. So communism, fascism, scientism. So what does Tolkien do?
Scientism.
Yes, that science is the end, and it explains everything.
It's the new religion.
The godless religion. All these wonderful benefits that science gives us, it can improve human nature. That's why science was so connected to the eugenics movement.
Yes.
Right? So they are deliberately saying, wait a minute, there's more to human life and reality than science or materialism, and the ideologies that are trying to enslave us, we need to push back because of the value that we place on human life and human dignity, the value of every human soul. Think about the Hobbit. Think about the children in the Chronicles of Narnia. A mouse named Reepicheep is a major character in the story. Why? Because individuals matter. They're pushing back against the totalitarian state, which by definition says the individual doesn't matter.
And these two men who'd both fought in World War I were dearest of friends.
Yes, they became friends from 1926 right through the end of their lives. And that friendship, that fellowship, which then expanded to other Christian writers, the Inklings, they together as a group, they decide we are going to push back against the madness that is now surrounding us in our academic world, in the literary world.
And they reinforced each other. So they'd write the stories, they'd write the chapters, and then they'd bounce them off each other.
They'd read them out. Imagine being in the room with the Inklings, with Tolkien, Lewis, Charles Williams, and others, and having to read your latest literary effort to them and be critiqued. Try that on for size, Seb.
are you pleased by the renaissance of Tolkien and C.S. Lewis?
Yes, I think because they've tapped into these themes that are universal themes.
Right, of course.
And they go back to the classic texts, though. These ancient classic texts.
Whether it's Beowulf or anything else.
Let's pick up, if we could talk about Virgil for a moment.
Yeah, totally.
Both these men were grounded in these great Homer, Virgil, Milton, Dante. Well, a few lines from Virgil, if we could, which I know captivated C.S. Lewis.
Please.
Because he translated Virgil himself and said it was the most important book outside of the Bible and Christian books on his life. Aeneas is being harassed by one of the goddesses, who says, the goddess against Aeneas, I will plead for help, the help that I need, wherever it may be. If I cannot sway the heavens, I will wake the powers of hell.
Wow.
The lust for power. I'll go wherever I can to
That's Nietzsche.
That's Nietzsche.
That's the will to power.
That's fascism. That's communism. And that's why those
works.
And
that's works, in the ancient Greeks.
And there it is. And the cancel culture wants to cancel Virgil and all of those insights. That's where we are.
I'm sorry, guys. I've said this for years. If you look, my thing is war and national security. There is nothing new under the sun. I'm sorry. If you understand the immutable characteristics of man, there is nothing new under the sun. The book is A Hobbit, A Wardrobe, and A Great War. And our very special guest is Professor Joseph LeConte of the Heritage Foundation's Simon Center for American Studies. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First, coming to you from the ReliefFactor.com studios. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, don't you dare touch that dial.
ReliefFactor.com studios. This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
How good a night of sleep did you get? You feel rested when you wake up in the morning If you don't, may the good doctor recommend something. Do what I do and millions of your fellow Americans, even President Trump. Mike Lindell invented the MyPillow, the pillow that never gets hot, never loses shape. Over 51 million sold. And right now, they're after him. The leftists, the cancel culture fascists, 25 corporations boycotting his goods. Support this great American and get a good night's sleep. Use my name and Mike's going to give you up to 66% off. Call 800-829-8468. He has over 100 incredible products, from his Giza cotton dream sheets to his pet beds, his pajamas, his lambskin slippers, and of course the MyPillow. Go to MyPillow.com, check it all out. Use promo code G-O-R-K-A for the deepest of deep discounts. 800-829-8468, MyPillow.com, promo code G-O-R-K-A. We are back with the author of A Hobbit, A Wardrobe, and A Great War. Can I exploit you mercilessly now that you're in studio?
Please do.
So I'm having a battle with myself because I've written 3 books, and they're all factual. And I have very little time for fiction, very little time. I want to read things about national security, grand strategy, and so forth. And now I think they want me to write another one. And I said, I'm not going to do it. I'm not interested because I don't want to preach the same things to the same circle. We have a culture to save. We have a civilization to save. And I'm toying with the idea of fiction, of doing, you know, I'm not Tolkien, God forbid, or C.S. Lewis. But the idea that you smuggle the important message into a larger structure, I think it just makes sense because I've seen things over my 50 years on this planet, and one thing is indisputable. I don't care what your politics are. Humans need stories like they need oxygen, Joe.
Yes.
So is this a good idea, bad idea?
I'm going to fan the flames of that desire. Fan the flames.
Fan away.
And here's, I'll give you a C.S. Lewis example.
Yes.
1938, he writes Out of the Silent Planet, the first of his space trilogy.
Fabulous. His science fiction works fabulous.
And he's stunned to discover, I mean, the book is really about the fall of man. He's stunned to discover that the reviewers, even though they like the book, they don't realize what it's about. They don't pick up on the spiritual implications of it. And then he says to Tolkien and to others, he says, you know, if I had more time and more talent, this would be a pretty good way to try to influence British culture and the English language culture for the gospel. I mean, that's literally what he says. And I'll read just a couple lines.
Because
even in this book, he's bringing back, he's recalling memories, I think, from the First World War, even as he's telling the science fiction story. The fight between Ransom and Weston and their enemies. They had stood shoulder to shoulder. He's fighting with one of these aliens against the dark side. They had stood shoulder to shoulder in the face-off of an enemy, and the shapes of their heads no longer mattered. And he, Ransom, had come through it and not been disgraced. He had grown up.
Wow.
That's a soldier in the First World War.
Yeah.
How he feels after the first time.
Well, the critics missed it.
Then they missed that, I think, but they missed the great theme of the fall of man embedded in this work. So, yes, I'm going to fan the flame of that, my friend, because what do stories do? They summon the moral imagination in ways that prose can't.
So it's the transmission belt that's important. It's the fact that the imagination is engaged.
Yes.
Is that the key?
Yes. That you begin to see, what does heroism, virtue, sacrifice for a noble cause, what does it look like? What does it look like?
Because that cannot be engendered. That internalization cannot be engendered in a clinical analysis. Yeah. You can't write about heroism scientifically.
Yes.
And have it sink in, can you?
That's why didactic instruction so often just falls flat.
Right.
I think this is why, with all due respect, why many sermons in our churches fall flat. Too much straight didactic instruction, not enough storytelling. It's not an accident that the favorite teaching tool of Jesus is the story, is the parable. So fan the flame of that desire, yes.
Well, okay, enough said. That's done. That's settled. Thank you very much. I just have to go and write something that will actually sell. Why is it? Do you have, again, I'm always asking you to help me find the answers to the questions that have vexed me for some time. Why is it that we've so forgotten this capacity in the conservative world? I mean, I look at quote unquote conservative content in the film world or the TV world, and it's usually garbage. It's pedestrian. It bangs you. It's didactic when it's meant to be fiction, and it's lacking any form of subtlety. We used to be good at that. 60 years ago, said you know the Fords, the Houstons, the Q Corps, they didn't wear conservatism on their sleeves, but the films they made were about eternal values.
Yeah, this is part of the evacuation of the institutions that help form those artists and shape the world views of those artists. Right.
So the ecosystem. So we're missing. We have to rebuild the ecosystem.
Absolutely right. We've got to rebuild those institutions and house them with people who are genuinely talented. Recognize those gifts. The money is out there, Seb, to fund those positions, to fund those institutions. But it goes elsewhere. Let's face it. It goes elsewhere.
Well, you're doing a great job. I can't wait to see your film series on C.S. Lewis and on Tolkien and the new one you're doing with Heritage. We've got a minute and a half left in this segment with Joseph LeConte. I'm excited that there's so many people at school boards across the nation. We've had them on our show saying, you're not teaching. You're doing politics. You're doing ideology. Critical race theory is racist. It is bigoted. Are we seeing a renaissance? Are we seeing an awakening of America, potentially?
I think so. I've been involved through Heritage in these various town hall meetings with people on school boards, heading up boards of education in various states, parents and teachers who think that the 1619 Project, all the critical race theory stuff, is... it's like a poison. It really is like a cancer, and they want to push back, and they're looking for resources. That's one of the reasons we're doing this little film series for the Heritage Foundation. 10-minute video segments teaching the story of freedom. You can work that right into your classroom and to inoculate young people from the lies that are going to come at them otherwise.
Yeah. Behind the Iron Curtain, my parents... when they came home from school, their parents had to literally deprogram the garbage out of their heads, had to tell them the truth as opposed to the lies their teachers had imposed upon them during the day in school. Let's not arrive at that situation. The time is now. Find the courage, educate yourselves, and take a stand. Back with Professor LeConte momentarily, but in the meantime... order his book, A Hobbit, A Wardrobe, and A Great War. Follow him on Twitter at Joseph LeConte. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First.
Portions of today's program are brought to you by Prison Fellowship.
Are you proud that you're part of the MAGA family, that you listen to America First? Do you believe in America First? If you do, check out our new store, SebGorkaStore.com, where you can get your America First gear, signed copies of my books as well, From Defeating Jihad to the War for America's Soul. That's SebGorkaStore.com, SebGorkaStore.com. We are back. It literally felt like 4 minutes this hour, four bloody minutes, and I've got 2.5 left. Let me ask you the big picture question. How do you feel when you look at Western civilization? We can't give up because we know we've already won in eternal terms. Are you feeling a slight tending towards the lighter side? Are you seeing people wake up? How much of an optimist are you that we can turn the ship around?
You know, Seb, the crisis suggests the solution. If the crisis is this assault on our memory, assault on the past... George Orwell, he who controls the past controls the future. If that's a huge part of the problem, well, the answer is right. The tools are in our hands.
Right. We don't have to invent anything.
The tools are in our hands. We need to write better history books, get them in the places that matter. We need to write better stories, make better films. All of that we can do. And what I've found in my interactions, especially with young people, tell the story with intellectual honesty and integrity, but tell it in a way that's really entertaining and provocative and fun.
Yeah.
You then inoculate them from the lies. And I've seen that again and again and again. I taught Western civilization for 10 years at the King's College. I still involve with students at so many levels. So that's where I'm hopeful, because they get it. And their moral imagination can be challenged and seized and inspired when we simply do our jobs and fulfill our own sense of calling in this space.
Well, you're doing exactly that. You're inspiring people. Where can those who've listened to this show watch these movies? Where will they be posted? Yeah.
Heritage.org. Go to heritage.org.
Fabulous. Super easy. Heritage.org. We can do it if we wake up. There was that movie, kind of mediocre, but it had Sean Connery in it. It was based upon a graphic novel, I think by Frank Miller, called The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. All we need now... I've said this since I was in the White House, since this came to me, is we need a League of Serious Gentlemen. It's time to get serious. It's time to pick up the baton. And as the good professor has told us, we don't have to invent anything. We have it. It's there. The true histories from the Aeneid, from Thucydides, from Plato, Socrates, through the Romans, through the Greeks, to Churchill and beyond. It's all there. God bless you, Professor, for doing what you do. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First on the Salem Radio Network. Don't forget to subscribe to our stream at the Rumble YouTube alternative. They believe in the First Amendment. They believe in the Constitution. It's rumble.com/Seb Gorka, S-E-B-G-O-R-K-A. That's rumble.com/Seb Gorka. Also, we're on Twitter, Seb Gorka. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. Don't miss a moment of the show. Subscribe today. Back after these messages.